Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
I'm Phil.
I'm Tristan.
Okay.
Oh.
And we've got to say very big welcome back to Chris, because he's been away for so many weeks. We've just been getting to wonder what he looked like, didn't we?
We should have started up with I'm Phil, I'm Gordon, and I'm back.
But my name's not back.
Oh, where is it?
And your holiday, did you have a good time?
I did, but first we've got to say thank you to Tim for the news. Mm-hmm. He was reading lovely and slowly there, beautiful enunciation and all the rest of it. It's gorgeous. Thanks very much for Scotty for the morning show. And thanks for Lance at the front desk.
And Julie is just taking over.
Wow. Excellent.
So here we go.
Yes, and Julia. I want to say a big thank you also to David, who helped out whilst I was missing in action.
Yes. That's right. You were, but David missed out a couple of days because he was on jury duty. He was a bit upset about that, but he had to do jury duty, so that was it, you know.
Yeah, you had no option.
Tell us about your holidays. Where did you go?
Well, I flew into Charles de Gaulle Airport, Paris, and then spent about a week and a half in France, in either Paris or in rural France.
Oh, you went rural.
I went rural.
Oh,
but I've noticed on some of those cooking shows how they have got some very nice seaside towns where you can buy fish, where the fishing boats come in, beautiful little landlocked stone harbours and things like this. Mm. That's where I ended up, two places. And it was very quiet and slow and very relaxing, beautiful fish meals at the restaurant. Yes, I got sick of bouillabaisse by the end of the
I would imagine
session.
That, yes. Yeah,
but it was gorgeous. And then I popped down to Basel or Bâle in Switzerland. Never been there before. Very interesting old town.
Yeah, that's the capital of Switzerland, isn't it?
Bern.
Bern is the capital of Switzerland.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I popped into Germany for a few days. And then with my friend from Germany, we went to Malta.
Oh, right.
Very, very interesting place. Mm. 7,000 years of history is still current there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get away from it. It's a big rock in the Mediterranean, closer to Africa than it is to Europe.
That's right.
And a crossroads of the Mediterranean Sea.
Granted the George Cross after the end of the Second World War, too. The only country in the world to ever get an award, a royal award like that, the George Cross.
Yes.
For their bravery.
Mm. Yeah. And a very interesting place and, of course, full of Australians.
Oh, yes.
Well, of course, the names are and the people look, because we've got such a big population of Maltese here in Australia, that, you know, it's sort of like home for Australians as much as it is for home for Maltese.
Leanie's from Malta. One of
that's
our
right.
staff here is from Malta. Yeah.
Mm.
I've got quite a lot of Maltese friends, actually.
Mm. Oh, that's very
there's
good.
A lot of them, lot of Maltese people in Australia. Big community.
So I know a lot of people who like Maltesers.
I hate them. I don't like Maltese. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's gorgeous.
Yeah, you've been back, and of course, you were working very hard yesterday at our AGM, which was interesting. Good meeting. Very, very big meeting. I thought it was one of the biggest we'd ever had.
And very good results. So they should be up on the web by now, and I mm-hmm. think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a change of our board of management, our board,
Yeah, the board's changed.
Committee of Management.
five members came back. Some of them have voted back on, and several new members. That's one thing I love about Joy, that they do change these things around and everybody gets a chance to do something and make a go of it, which keeps the station on its toes.
It does. We are, as an organisation, very lucky to have a very good operating board.
They're very good.
Very qualified.
Financially and experience-wise in the running of things. Yes.
Phil, it's about time for you to say something.
I figure if you hang around on the board too long, you'll get bored.
Oh, but apart from that...
Oh, I went and have some music.
Oh, all right then.
Well...
Castles in the Sky. Here we go. You're on Joy.
Do you ever question your life?
Do you ever... Melbourne's lovable radio station. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil and Tristan on Been There, Done That, Joy 94.9. And one of the things that I sort of recognised when I was on my holidays, that because I've seen so much of the world and I've been going to all these historical sites that are now on the United Nations list of valued properties and antiquities.
To be saved, in other words.
To be saved, yes. I realised we've only got one world. And a lot of people seem to think that it's their world, but it's humanity's world. And some people, some countries, are being very naughty in trying to be nature and change what nature has put in front of them.
Well, that actually happened, didn't it, in the middle of Russia near Kazakhstan?
Yeah.
With the great big Aral Sea. And on the 22nd of October in 1990, the Royal Geographic Society declaims irrigation as one of the causes of the world's worst ecological disaster around the Aral Sea. And that place has just absolutely been ruined. It used to be the fourth largest lake in the world or something or other, and it was just made absolutely rotten by the Russians.
Well, they decided that all that water could be better used in growing crops or whatever. So they thought, oh, well, the water in this particular sea, which is fed by all the other rivers, is never-ending. You can just drag as much out as you want and there's always going to be more water comes in.
But they dammed some of the rivers too, which was the worst part about it, because there was no water then went into it. They just used it for irrigation.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Cause and effect.
But they also forgot that the people lived around the Aral Sea. They used it for fishing, to feed themselves and for the water for their own things, and they were just thrown basically on the heap.
That's right. Yeah. I've seen photos of big, huge fishing trawlers sitting on dry land. They weren't thrown up there by a tsunami or anything.
No.
Someone just pulled the plug.
Somebody
the water
the plug.
Went out of the lake.
That was a very cheap cruise.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we'll be walking to the ship now.
Yes. But there's also those sort of things happening, well, here in Australia, for instance. The Murray-Darling Basin was another one of those places where they took so much water out of everything. And when they built Cubby Station in Queensland and stopped the water from coming down the Darling.
That was for cotton.
Cotton or rice or one of those things, yeah.
But, I mean, it's one of the hottest parts of Australia and evaporation rates should be enormous.
Yep.
And so what are you doing? You're just sort of spreading it on the ground and letting it evaporate away.
So is this just the arrogance of man, is it?
I think
so. The water's there, we'll use it.
I think it's the thing that you've got to make a dollar out of everything that you do, you know, so that they could see money being made out of using the water from the Darling to grow cotton or rice or whatever it was up in Queensland.
We pretend to know so much about evolution and how things have sorted themselves out as far as the planet goes. So then we just mess them up.
Yeah, because there's money to be made.
So nature's put this river here and it's worked for millennia.
Yeah.
And then we say, oh, we could put the water over there. So,
But see, the Victorian government had done it, or they've been doing some wonderful things with the irrigation system up in the north of Victoria. They've been covering the channels so that there was no evaporation. They've saved so many millions of litres of water because it doesn't get evaporated anymore.
And you know what they've just realised? They can actually have successful platypuseries around by maintaining the water flow in rivers.
That's right. And they've just been doing that so that they can do it. That was in the paper yesterday or the day before, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Brilliant. And, of course, with the Snowy Hydro scheme, they actually diverted one of the Snowy River from running to the sea.
That's right.
To running to a dam.
That's right. And then, of course, that politician got elected on getting the Snowy running again, and he was able to convince the federal government and the New South Wales government to release so many gigalitres of water into the river so that the river could come back to its, not as big as it was, but at least it's flowing again, which is the main thing.
Yeah.
We do some terrible damage to our world with,
yes,
with
we
this
do.
When
well,
it goes on.
Of course, the Chinese have thought that they would do something bigger and brighter and better than anybody else. So what did they do? They completed in 2006 a big dam which actually blocked the water flow from what they call the Three Gorges.
That's right.
Mm. And isn't it just...
Well,
it's gorgeous. Gorgeous. It is gorgeous.
No,
yes.
It's not particularly
a bit
gorgeous.
Of an eyesore.
Yeah. 1.3 million people were relocated.
That's right.
Yeah. I know that's a lot of people in China, but even so.
But when you say 1.3 million people in China, you've realised that they've got a billion people that live there, and, you know, so they don't care. They just sort of say, go, you know, we got to.
But the water blocked up is about 400 miles long. That's what, 600 kilometres. It's a big, big thing, and it's, the valleys are very deep, so there's lots and lots and lots of water stored up. And, of course, in that, they have stopped all the mud that was going down the river that used to flood onto the plains that would refresh the soil.
Fertilise the soil.
Exactly.
That's right. It's the same.
Do they have any platypuses?
They don't.
No.
I tried to create a platypus.
Did you?
But I ended up with a cat on a big plate. And it wasn't happy.
A plated puss.
Platypus.
Yeah. But, you know, 70% of China's fresh water is polluted.
That's right.
And all the junk that's going down these rivers into the dam, that's got to be sucked out of the bottom of the dam or else it will actually fill up with mud and rubbish.
Yeah, this is right.
And
this
hold
is
less
happen.
And less water.
Well, another great river that relies on that is the Nile.
Oh, yeah.
The Nile River relies on flooding to keep the soil coming up into the land that they use when the Nile goes down again. They've learned to live with nature over centuries, and now with technology they're ruining what is nature's way.
We think we know better.
And we think we know better.
And we don't. And we seem to learn the hard way.
And, of course, the water is used for one thing, but then they also generate power out of that. And, of course, they have limited opportunities, except by importing Australian brown coal, to generate power. So hydro is actually a non-polluting power source.
Yes.
It doesn't pollute the atmosphere.
No.
But that water polluted the earth.
Yes.
Look, there's just no such thing as a free lunch. So if you want hydropower, you've got to pay the price in land and resettlement killing heaven knows how many species. And
well, that's right. The animals that would have lived in the Three Gorges, the natural animals that would have been there, the snakes and lizards and birds and all the rest of it, they've got nowhere to live now, of course,
Well, because they're all trying to use iPads to get into rental sites and things like
that's
that
right,
in China. They just haven't got the dexterity on their fingers.
They might not have.
Hello?
They might
not, but
well, how do you get to realestate.com when your tree's been taken away?
Thank you, but, Phil.
It is amazing what they've done. And, of course, we can't live without water, which is the problem. You know, that's the one thing we... Two things we have to have, air and water.
And, of course, what are we doing here in Melbourne when we're expanding the city across all our growing fields?
That was a bit in the paper this morning about that. Yeah,
I just realised that
that's been
another,
going on for years.
Yes, but we are going to run out of market gardens.
My family had a market garden out at Highbury Road in Tallyho. They were out there in 1901, and then they were there for years and years and years. They kept growing. They grew cabbages and all sorts of stuff out there. And they would bring it into the market, in Victoria Market. But then as the land started, the people started to spread the houses, the land became too valuable. They had to sell it and move to Cranbourne. No water at Cranbourne, so they had to build a dam at Cranbourne. And then they built the dam there, and then the houses spread to Cranbourne. So they once again, they were taken over by people, by the houses. And these were people who were growing vegetables for the people to eat.
Do we have town planners in this country?
We do.
Are they unemployed?
But see, they're planning towns, not planning
sustainability.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, Aretha Franklin, she's talking about respect. We should have respect for our world.
Our world.
And it's a little spelling lesson too.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. joy.org.au for the world.
With Chris Gordon and Phil, been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
Who was reading that last ad?
Oh,
Some could have been Bruno. Me.
He was on Twitter at the time. Did you hear all that tweeting going on in the background?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Now, we've got some birthdays come up this week. Some quite interesting people that had birthdays this week, didn't they?
Well, the week just finishing, just sort of. On the 23rd of October, 1954, was born a Taiwanese-American film director, Ang Lee.
Ang Lee is quite well known for some very, very fine movies that he made.
The Wedding Banquet.
That was wonderful. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Oh, it was fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Then he made
Crouching Tiger and Hidden Dragon.
Yep, that was a fabulous movie.
And Hulk.
But in between Crouching Tiger, after Hulk and then The Life of Pi, he did film about us, Brokeback Mountain, of course. And
boy, did that stir up some emotions.
Well, of course, several people wanted to make the movie before Ang Lee got hold of it, and they found that they were having too much trouble getting people to play the parts, and it wasn't sort of working because it was the finding actors that would play gay, you know, which was at the time. But when Ang Lee came along and saw the thing and decided that he wanted to do it, he was able to convince Jake Gyllenhaal and the Australian actor.
Heath Ledger,
thank you. Thank you, Phil.
I could have stepped in any time and kissed either of those boys.
Yes.
And they actually signed up for it. When they knew that Heath Ledger had signed up for it, Jake Gyllenhaal said, yes, I will.
Yeah.
And then they got the thing going, and it turned to he won an Oscar for that, an Academy Award for the director, best director in that movie. But it never got the best picture of the year.
No.
It was strange, because how can you be the best director and not have the best film, you know? This is
have to speak to the Academy.
Yeah, speak to the Academy. But they didn't want to give it all to the gay scene, of course, because the film industry is very, very straight-oriented, even though half of them are gay.
Well, more than half.
Yes.
I wonder if they got an MTV Movie Award for the best male-on-male kiss. Because MTV have awards for every little category you can think of.
Do they?
Best punch.
Oh, right.
Probably best hiccup.
Well, you feel that Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger could have won it?
Should have,
yeah.
Or Jake. He's a very pretty boy.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes. His sister's not a bad actor either.
Yeah.
but it was interesting how Ang Lee actually used the story and brought out things there that perhaps other film producers mightn't have done.
The way he directed that movie was absolutely fabulous. And of course, filming it in Montana, which is the most beautiful part of America.
Horizons.
Yes, absolutely superb stuff. But
also a very homophobic part of
America. A very homophobic part of the world, yeah. But that's off air. We were talking about transgendered people and the Native American Indians. They hold their Two Spirits conferences in Montana.
Probably just to upset the cowboys.
Yeah.
So. But I think the actual realization that two guys at the prime of their life, isolated in the rest of the world and in such a rugged environment, there was a softness, there was a familiarity that developed between them.
But there was also internalized homophobia in that movie too, because they didn't want to recognize it. You know, they tried not to recognize it, you know. Mm.
But
they couldn't stay away from one another.
It was a struggle that we've all been through in one form or another in our lives, certainly in coming out.
Yeah. It was very real in that sense.
Yes, that's
right. And you could actually feel, or I guess could associate with the two extremes. It's madly in love, but can't be holding hands down the street.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and that is it is internal homophobia, but it's also survival.
Yeah.
Where if you were to walk down the street, you'd only do it once.
Oh,
probably in Montana. Yeah.
Well, that's right. You'd find yourself on a
but probably not now with the equal marriage thing that's in America at the moment. With
that's not going as smoothly as
no. There's still states that don't want to have it and all the rest of it. Yeah.
I've got to find a little Kentucky Fried friend, haven't we?
Yes,
that lady down there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
you mentioned transgender people in your little statement there, Gordon. But there's actually a few people who have been challenging our concept of the binary.
Yes, there are. Yeah, there's quite a few of them.
There is no longer male and female. And someone else who we remember at this time on October the 30th, 1990, was the death of Craig Russell, who was born Russell Craig Edie.
Yes.
And what was he, please, Gordon?
He was a female impersonator. I've seen him perform, actually. He was absolutely brilliant, totally believable when he was doing Carol Channing, Bette Davis, Mae West, Barbara Streisand, Two Little Bankhead, Marlene Dietrich. He would do all these women and sing in their voices.
And speak in their voices
and do everything, and you would swear to God you were watching them. You know.
So he was an impersonator, an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't trans himself in any way.
No, he was a gay man, but he did father a child.
He was born in 1948, so he would have been doing his performances in the 1970s, where male and female genders were about the only two that were known. So here he was, in those days, challenging that concept.
Yes, that's right. And he also made a movie which I saw in 1977, which was called Outrageous, and based on a short story that written by Gibson, one of his friends, about the time as roommates. And it was into the 28th Berlin International Film Festival, where Russell won the Silver Bear for Best Actor. A decade later, in 1987, he starred in the sequel to Outrageous, entitled Outrageous. Outrageous.
Yeah.
So there we go.
And he was stuck also with the concepts of family that he had to obey in the 1970s.
Yep.
And
he actually had a daughter. He had a daughter named Susan Allison.
Yeah.
And then he actually married his close friend Laurie Jenkins in 1982. He actually died of an AIDS-related illness in October the 30th, 1990, aged 42 from an AIDS-related illness.
So he was
brilliant on stage, I tell you. He was one of those few people that you could absolutely believe what he was doing. Mm.
Someone else who's sort of had a birthday around about this time, the 25th of October, yesterday, David James Furnish, better known as...
Mrs. Elton John.
Well,
Mr. Elton
John. Is he David John?
Yeah.
David John. Mm. Yes. He's actually married to Elton John now.
Yeah, that's right. He's a filmmaker. He's Canadian.
Yes, he's a Canadian. Yes, another Canadian.
From a lovely country called Canada.
Yep, Canada have given us a lot of really good people.
Yes.
And Justin Bieber.
Oh, you had to go and spoil it, didn't you?
Well, I said good people and Justin Bieber.
Yes, and they just changed their prime minister as well.
Yes,
they well, we've
for another Justin.
It's a really good thing to do.
Yeah, Jussie. There you go. But David Furnish, filmmaker in his own right, producer and director. He's very experienced in business, and I don't know how they managed to hook up together, but obviously...
I think they met at a party somewhere. He was introduced. They were introduced at somebody else's party somewhere. I remember.
Are you suggesting that Elton John used to go to parties?
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Such a shy little boy.
Hard to imagine, isn't it? Yeah. But
they had a civil partnership back in 2005.
Yeah.
And they got...
Nice to know it was civil.
No.
That is a big argument at court.
Yeah. And they've got a couple of kids.
That's right, two boys.
Yeah. Via surrogacy. Mm. And after gay marriage became legal in England, in Wales in 2014, they got married.
That's right.
Properly married on the 21st of December, the 9th anniversary of their civil partnership.
That's right, yep.
So,
if you check outside, everybody, if you're listening at home, go look out your window. The sky hasn't fallen.
It didn't, did it? No. I think somebody should tell Senator Abetz about that. We've had a message.
Oh, yes. And
he says, "G'day, guys. Love your show. I know you won't forget to mention Betty Sujecki's winner of the Anne Hamilton Award for Volunteer Excellence. So proud of our Betty. Yay, Betty," from Colin.
Well, indeed.
Yeah, indeed. We love Betty. She is absolutely a treasure around this place. She's a beautiful, beautiful person.
Although she points a camera at you too often.
Yeah, she does. That camera
really goes, bad habit.
Yeah, severely bad habit.
She's a bit snappy.
Oh, yeah, very snappy.
She can get very snappy at times. Yes.
Boy.
But she's,
don't you love it when people steal your lines?
Yeah. But she is so gorgeous. She's a wonderful, wonderful treasure and an asset around
And, of course, what a lot of people mightn't realise is that our Betty is recorded in the annals of Joy, having written letters in 1993 to John Oliver saying, "Thank you for your concept of having a gay radio station."
Yep. She's got a two-figure number, membership number, you know, hasn't she?
Three-figure, 174. Oh, sorry. How do I know that?
I don't know.
We really shouldn't be discussing members' ages or membership.
But she's been a member of Joy for a long, long time.
That's it. Yep. So thanks indeed, Betty. Yes, you've been recognised by the whole of Joy as being a worthy recipient of the Anne Hamilton Volunteer Award.
And she's the only one who's allowed to pop in any time we have a big celebrity without seeming creepy.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Because we have all these volunteers come out of the woodwork
as soon as there's a Tina Arena or somebody arrives in, but Betty's there with a camera taking photographs of
them all.
That's
it. Yeah, yeah. So stay tuned. There's more. We're going to have a little bit of Sia. She says, "You've changed." Well, I don't think I have
changed.
I did
this morning when I got dressed, yes.
Oh,
I did change.
I didn't see her.
Okay, I'll tell you an off-mic story. Thank you. You're on Joy.
Joy.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Oh, and Tristan, who read the announcement there very well. Thank you, Tristan.
That's okay.
Checks in the mail.
Okay, good.
Now, on this day, 30 years ago, a very important event occurred.
We went back to the future then, didn't we?
We did.
Oh, what? Don't start that again.
Yeah, we came forward from there on, yes.
Oh, okay then. Sorry, thank you. The Australian government returned the ownership of Uluru to the traditional owners this day back in 1985.
Yes, and Bob Hawke was the Prime Minister at the time, and Sammy Wilson was the chairman of the Uluru Kadutcha Park Board and praised the former Prime Minister, Bob Hawke. When he was Prime Minister, he put a lot of thought into it, and it must have come to him, you know, that we must give this land back, said Wilson. And that's quite true, too. They needed to give it back, you know.
It hasn't quite worked out, unfortunately.
No, not really.
Because whilst the tourists still go to Uluru, the actual involvement of the Aboriginal communities there is not as good as it could be. This great big resort run by major operator.
Yep.
There is a small little tour group run by the Aboriginals that is not particularly well patronised because the market has been sewn up. And whilst the access to the rock has been managed now in the terms of how the Indigenous people want their rock to be respected, they're not getting all the benefits of the tourism that was going to actually help them in their own community.
Yeah, well, how are they going to develop without an income?
Exactly.
And just a big rock.
And it's a great rock. It really is. It's the second largest monolith in the world. The first largest is also in Australia.
The Olgas.
No, it's another thing altogether. It's not the Olgas. I thought it was the Olgas, but it's not.
Ah.
It's listed on that thing that I remember reading, but I can't find it. I'll have to keep talking and I'll see if I can find out the name of it.
And, of course, we as Western tourists go there and we think, wow, beautiful sunsets, what a marvellous rock, I'd love to be able to walk on it, and all these sorts of things, forgetting that to the Indigenous peoples, that rock is the equivalent of their biggest cathedral. It's sacred to them. It's got so many stories.
Yep.
And we, in our ignorance, go there and we don't actually respect these stories.
Yeah, we don't really try to understand things.
No.
I think globally. So, well, there's a big rock. Let's climb it.
Yeah, but
that's, you know, because it is their sort of mentality.
Yeah, that's right. But then, of course, there's been so many people have died climbing the rock. They've had heart attacks and all this sort of thing. But now you're not allowed to climb it. They don't like you to climb the rock.
No.
At all. And I can understand that. It'd be like trying to climb up St. Paul's Cathedral, top of St. Paul's Cathedral or something like that, because the land is the overarching thing for the whole of the Aboriginal communities of Australia, that they believe in the land.
That's why we always say welcome to country.
That's right.
It's their land. But
they belong to the land.
Yes. Right.
They don't. See, we pretend to own it.
That's right.
Which
yeah.
is somewhat presumptuous.
Slightly different. Yeah.
And a bit pretentious, like, I own this bit of dirt. Well, no, you don't.
No, not really. No.
And where are you going to take it anyway?
No, it's amazing, really, that it's taken all these years for people to suddenly start to learn a little bit about the Aboriginal culture, which is so fine and so old. that it should never be forgotten, really. It should be taught in schools, as far as I'm concerned. I've always said that they should teach Aboriginal history in schools.
And it wasn't broken, so we fixed it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But anyhow. And there's another place in Australia that's celebrating something today too.
Later this week.
Later this week,
Almost on the same latitude, I would imagine. It's Marble Bar in Western Australia, back in 1923, had a record 160-day heat wave. Can you imagine that? Every day for 160 days? How much? That's half a year.
I'm not sure I could spend 2 days in Marble Bar without a heat wave.
My father worked on the Marble Bar Railway before I was born.
Was he a trainer?
He was a trainer.
Stop it.
Wheels on him and push him up and down the track.
Push him up and down the track.
No. But this heat wave that they experienced in Marble Bar, where the temperature was over the old 100 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 37.8 Celsius. So it was hot.
It was 1923, yeah. So it's very hot. Anyhow, we've had a couple of messages, Chris.
Oh, have we?
We've had one from our gorgeous, gorgeous Nina.
Hello, Nina.
And Nina sent a long message here. I'm going to have to read it. Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's great to have you back again, Chris.
Thank you.
Today's episode is just so, so interesting. And once again, I'm always learning very important facts about our world. It is such a shame that even in the beginning of the 21st century, on one hand, we accept it as being GLBTIQ in countries such as ours. And on the other hand, we can still be killed just for being GLBTIQ within other countries. It's great to know that in Australia we can enjoy our magnificent GLBTQI radio station, Joy 94.9, and should we so desire, be open about our partner preferences. Lots of love from Nina with kisses and hugs, and we give kisses and hugs back to you, Nina, as well, as usual. Beautiful to hear from you. And then was the message has been received from Nick. Love the show. Keep up the good work, guys and girls. A membership has been received from Nick in Fitzroy, so thank you for becoming a part of the Joy family or re-establishing part of the Joy family.
Thank you, Nick.
That's beautiful.
Excellent.
Yeah, so there we go. So Marble Bar and Uluru, two of the wonderful countries, parts of Australia, actually.
But also around about the 30th of October back in 1938, there was a radio program that went out and it created public hysteria.
Much like our radio program.
I'm sure they're marching in the streets.
Although we don't fib quite as much as some people.
Yes.
We're talking about an event that happened in the US, and there's no comment required there, when a famous actor, Orson Welles, was actually reading
A radio play.
Thank you, Phil. Yes. And this particular radio play was based on classical popular literary works. And there was a book by H.G. Wells called War of the Worlds, where Martians invaded the Earth. And the adaptation involved performing the play so that it sounded like a news broadcast about an actual invasion from Mars, a technique to heighten the dramatic effect. But the program created such panic among some listeners, who found it completely convincing, and they failed to hear the short explanations that were being given every 40 minutes, assuring the audience that it was just a radio play.
This is not happening. It is a radio play. And they were all panicking and getting out of the city.
See, that brief disclaimer was surrounded by hysterical news coverage.
Yes.
So which one are you going to remember?
The hysterical news coverage, I would have thought.
But in 1938, how many people would have known the H.G. Wells story?
Well, you would have imagined a lot of people.
Well,
I don't know, because it's...
Well, they didn't have any competition from TV or...
People read a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, but science fiction...
Yeah.
I would have thought a lot of people, either you'd be so interested you'd never miss one, or you'd think, oh, I'm not going to read that rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. But it created such havoc that cars were blocking the streets trying to get out of New York. It was just that there's been photographs shown of the people trying to get out of New York at the time because of that radio play. And Orson Welles' voice, of course, was just so powerful.
If you've heard actual playback of that broadcast.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's scary to listen to.
It is scary to listen to, really, now. You could see how people did it.
We've got modern technology, so people could use their search engine and go and listen to a bit of it.
Google would have been overwhelmed with how many Martians are coming and you know, have they hit Bourke Street yet?
And talking about Martians, they're going to form a colony on Mars now. It was on the news the other night. They've chosen one woman said she wants to go there, but if you go there, you can't come back.
No.
It's a one-way ticket.
Well, there's water to drink, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well, they figure there's water up there, yeah, but we don't know for sure yet.
No, and the only water that they can drink is what they take with them.
And they're not going to
recycle, recycle, recycle.
And they're not allowed to go outside because there's dust particles that are going almost at the speed of sound or something, or rather floating through the air, which would pierce their suits, doesn't matter what they were made of.
And the gamma rays and everything that come from the sun just fry them up anyway.
That's right.
No. Very brave people.
That's just about the end of us.
It is.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, well, only if you go to Mars, yes. But we're not going to Mars. But that's just about the end of the program, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Mars needs guitars.
Mars needs guitars.
They do.
Oh, do they? Oh, okay.
That's a throwback itself.
And hopefully Joe's coming in for the next show. I haven't seen him yet.
I haven't seen anybody
yet. He usually waves to us as he comes in. But
all right.
Wouldn't it be lovely?
Somebody will be taking
afternoon.
Over at 1 o'clock.
So stay tuned for all that. And yes, I suppose we've got to say it's nice to be back, but...
It's nice for you to be back, but we haven't gone away yet.
Oh.
Yet? Where am I going?
I don't know.
What haven't they told me?
Deep Dean?
Oh, dear. Deep Dean?
Somewhere like that.
Boy, that's a random suburb to come out of.
All right.
Although Dean is a very nice person.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad I had my holidays.
Yes.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We'll be with you next week, so stay tuned for Joe in the afternoon.
And thanks for your messages.
Indeed.
We'd love to getting them. Yep,
and
beautiful.
We'll copy you later.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll
All
hear
the best.
You next week.
Indeed. Bye-bye now.
I know.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.